A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The NFL preseason kicks off in less than 1 month. And lucky for you, the VSiN experts have been hard at work this offseason putting together our new NFL betting guide. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Get instant access to comprehensive team profiles with power ratings and win total predictions. Proven betting systems and trends like how to win with our betting splits. Plus top picks for season win totals, futures props, and awards like MVP and Rookie of the Year. To access this invaluable guide, you need to be a VSiN Pro subscriber, though. For a limited time, we're offering an unbeatable deal. Get a full year of VSiN Pro for just $199 instead of the usual $240. And as a special bonus, we'll add an extra month for free. That's 13 months of access to everything VSiN offers, including daily best bets, round-the-clock video content, premium analysis, exclusive betting splits data, and all our special edition betting guides to keep you informed and winning throughout the year. Don't miss out on our all-new NFL betting guide and this fantastic offer. Head over to VSiN.com/subscribe. Use promo code ANG.
Promo code ANG like ANG.
To get 13 months of VSiN Pro for only $199, gain instant access to our NFL betting guide. That's VSIN.com/subscribe with promo code ANG. Well, you know what I have proven really good at? Finding players whose tank just empties. And apparently it emptied for Lulu Sun after she won the first set. Didn't win the second. She broke back to make it 4-5, but she couldn't hold. She loses that, and then she had nothing in the third set. And so she gets trounced 6-1. Drew Dinsick joins us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line at whale_capper. You can follow him on both of his podcasts, of course, The Deep Dive with Andy Molitor and NBC Sports Bet the Edge pod with Jay Croucher. He joins us this morning from the LBC with his fish tank behind him. How you doing, Drew?
You know, just trying to make something out of this just atrocious Wimbledon. The degree, and you know, this is set aside the betting part of this because I've had some betting Wimbledons that were just like true chaos, like couldn't find a winner to save my life type of stuff. I'm referring more to the entertainment factor. Like this time of year, you know, a lot of cool European sports going on, a lot of sports in the middle of the beginning of the day. Wimbledon, of course, it holds a special place among anyone who cares about tennis. But the entertainment factor this year has just not been there. Part of it is obviously the rain. I thank you, by the way, to ESPN for all of the extended rain shots instead of key points.
Yes,
appreciating
thank you.
That. Uh-huh. I'd rather watch rain shots of Wimbledon, I guess, than commercials. Like they missed the entire break of serve to start the fourth set of Alcaraz Umber the other day, and I was just pulling my hair out. Like, what are we doing here, guys? Like, it's just at a commercial break, and like the entire match is being decided, and we're not seeing it. But that's fine. The entertainment factor has been pretty wanting here, and part of it is the men's side. We've kind of been waiting for the high leverage matches to get here, and that's starting today. I mean, the Sinner Medvedev match is pretty fascinating, and for even down 1-0. Circling now his first set, Medvedev feels like the much better player in this. And I have some Sinner outrights from pre-tournament. I was mostly keeping my powder dry to bet him against Alcaraz and bet him against Djokovic. But watching this right now, I think Sinner looks like he is dangerously close to running out of gas. He at least looks the more tired of these two players. And Sinner, Medvedev, for what it's worth, like his skill set has always been very, very kind of similar to Djokovic. We always kind of joke that it's Joker light for Medvedev. And he was off my radar for this tournament just because his serve has been kind of broken. The double faulting cost him the first set here. But I think there's a decent chance to get some Medvedev in not just this match, but to do some damage here long term.
Meanwhile, Djokovic clinical yesterday against Rune. He looks great.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was against Rune. So. Yeah. He hasn't shown us anything in so long, I can't even remember. But Djokovic has been strong. I think the rumors of his demise were greatly overstated. And, it's going to be opponent dependent how you treat that final. I don't think there's anyone... Demon Hour has been fine on grass in particular this in the run-up to this tournament, and he's looked good in this tournament, but he is the type of player that's consistently wilts against the likes of the Djokovic's of the world. So I'm fine putting Djokovic through to the semifinals where he likely takes down Taylor Fritz. And then things get interesting because between Sinner, Medvedev, Alcaraz, and Paul, you know, they're one of those four guys is going to be the biggest test of the tournament for Djokovic. And, you know, there are still things, you know, you look at a scoreline or you look at the way he wins points or wins sets, and you're thinking, oh, yeah, this is classic. But his movement is very, very different than I remember on grass. And in general, like he's very, you know, he's still favoring the knee and in the way he's setting up shots. And I think the right opponent could take advantage of that to the degree that it's at least a match in the final. So I get that Djokovic is still very likely to be your finalist, which means he has a very decent chance to win this title. But I'm probably going to be against him in that final, depending on the form of the player coming through now. It is set up nicely that you could have a player that limps in, right? Like if Sinner gets by Medvedev here today, but kind of goes five and then, you know, has to go to war with Alcaraz and then, you know, limps into the final on Sunday, then yeah, he's ripe to get upset. You know, he's right to not show up, not to be, the force I was hoping. And similar could be said for Alcaraz or Medvedev for that reason. So, I think we're a long way from understanding who's going to win the men's side. And then the women's side is just
bigger question.
Yeah. Last year we were in awe and just dumbstruck of Marketa Vondrousova running to the title. Like, I mean, Rybakina is probably still going to win. And that was a lot of people's picks pre-tournament. So it's not going to shock the world, but everybody else who's at this stage is like, huh? Yeah. What? Lulu Sun? Who? I know that that there were a ton of withdrawals. There were some illnesses. There's some, you know, that, but there, you know, there's been
injuries,
some shocking defeats.
Yeah.
Injuries. Yeah.
Well, let's start with Iga, right? Let's start with Iga, who said after her match, she just completely had nothing left in the tank. She now knows she shouldn't have done like the off court stuff after the French Open. Like when someone says, "Well, I just ran out of gas," I'm in a tank. Like as a handicapper, you just sort of put your palms up in the air. And you're like, okay, sure. I'd love to have known that, but she doesn't do it. And so you do have, and so I don't know what your thoughts are on that. And then who do you think, if it's not Rybakina, who do you think takes this?
I mean, I still don't really trust Rybakina. She hasn't been tested, so we don't know. But Ostapenko is the easy answer. Like, if you're saying I test who's played the best tennis on grass at this tournament, it's been Yelena. It's funny too, because like she's got the game. She's made the semifinals in her life. Here, and you know, she just has kind of lacked sort of the discipline and the mentality, and you know, kind of just loses it at inopportune times throughout her career, outside of the one French Open win. And so it's tough to trust a player like that. I had a bunch of, you know, expectation for her to go deep in at the French Open, and she wasn't able to do it. So, you know, there definitely is scars betting Yelena. But that said, she's playing the best tennis on grass of anyone that I've seen on the women's side by margin. And, you know, in general, it seems like her mentality is like in the exact right space. Right. Like she's not overthinking things when she's hitting unforced errors. She's not losing her cool. She's just regrouping and playing the next point with the same aggressiveness. And that's exactly what you want out of her if she's going to make a run to a title here. So Ostapenko, I have as a healthy favorite over Krejcikova here to get to the final. And then at that point, Ostapenko versus presumably Rybakina. And, you know, I'm not entirely dismissing Svitolina. She's been playing very well as well, but not really the type of game that gives Rybakina a difficult time. So I'm fine penciling in Rybakina and Ostapenko as your semifinal and honestly, your de facto final. I don't think whoever comes out of the bottom half of this draw is going to make much of a match of the final. And so that Ostapenko-Rybakina matchup is where I'm the most excited. And you know, just looking at the outright prices, plus 110 on Rybakina versus plus 650 on Ostapenko, no freaking way. Like, that's going to be a match. That is going to be a very close match. And those two ladies should be close, you know, priced somewhat similarly, in my opinion, to win the title overall. So for me, it's Yelena or bust. The bottom half of the draw and the enthusiasm over Navarro right now, I think, is a little overstated. I'm obviously extremely disappointed that Coco Gauff was such a no-show in her match against Emma Navarro, but like
that was your girl.
And boy did the world just, the path just kind of completely opened up for her, and she kind of had a, you know, had a clear hold of that match early and then just let it slip through her fingers and became an unforced error machine. It was very, very tough to watch, but Emma Navarro is not doing anything that I'm especially impressed by. So, you know, I'm against her today, in this match against Jasmine Paolini, who I think is a very underrated player, weirdly. So who knows, but, we're Paolini for me today.
We are oppo on that one. And, Drew, the way it's been going, that ain't a bad place for you to be. That ain't a bad place for you to be, my friend.
A lot of tennis left.
Yeah. Oh, no. We've had a good couple days until this morning. Okay. We'll come back. Drew's betting all kinds of things. Tour de France. The Olympics. We'll get his thoughts on those. That's on the other side. Numbers Game Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Make this NFL season your best ever with our all-new VSiN NFL betting guide. The guide is packed with everything you need to bet the NFL smarter, including in-depth reviews of all 32 teams with win total projections for every team, new quarterback and head coach breakdowns, Super Bowl predictions, a prop betting guide, plus best futures bets from the VSiN experts, including MVP, Rookie of the Year, Coach of the Year awards, which we'll get into momentarily. Whether you're a seasoned bettor just getting started, our NFL betting guide is your ticket to smarter, more informed bets. Visit VSiN.com/guide. To get your copy of our all-new NFL betting guide today. That's VSIN.com/guide. Daniil Medvedev up a break now in set number 3, set a piece. And so advantage Medvedev. You miss the French umpires, don't you, where they're like advantage.
Oh, completely. Are you kidding me?
Egalité.
It's not even close. And, you know, at the time, you want to rip on them not using the technology, but it's kind of funny when they get out of the chair and run all the way over.
They just do this with their hand, and they go, sorry. In their French way. Okay. We did this earlier with MVP, but let's do it with a deeper dive, because we really didn't give our thoughts in terms of picks for MVP. But for Coach of the Year, I would like to do that. So here are, going back to Cleve TA's appearance on the show yesterday, here are the criteria that one needs, again, in the same style that we did the whole NCAA championship formula. He has done this for NFL awards. A Coach of the Year is a great case study. So, 15 straight winners, 15 in a row, have been on a team with at least 9 wins. So, if you finish 8-9, if you finish with a losing record this year, any losing record, doesn't matter where you come from, you just haven't won this. So, if the Carolina Panthers go 8-9, which would be a 6-game increase over what they were last year, that would buck this entirely. It wouldn't be enough. 15 straight winners of this award have been on a team with at least 9 wins, talking Coach of the Year. The average preseason win total of the last 15 winners is 7.5 wins. No winner in the last 15 years came into the season with a win total of greater than 9.5. So, your win total can't suck, but it can't be too good either, because then you aren't really exceeding expectations by that much, right? So it can't be greater than 9.5. These are the last 15 winners. The number of wins for the team increased by an average of 5.5 games from the prior year. So you really do have to have a spectacular improvement. That one would qualify the Panthers, even though the other one disqualified them. Nearly half of the last 15 winners were first-year head coaches for their team. Okay, so let's put all three of those things into a sort of mix and who it disqualifies, who it applies to. First of all, the disqualifications. What does that mean? So, candidates like Kyle Shanahan, John Harbaugh, Dan Campbell, Andy Reid, they're already disqualified because your season win totals are too high.
Yep.
Right? So Dan Campbell winning his division, like, I don't want to hear anybody say, oh, but the Lions win the division and they look like they could win that. He's not going to win Coach of the Year. He's not. Not at least according to these historical trends on these. Now, who does, all those three things we just talked about, all those parameters, who does qualify then? Okay. Let me go to the phone here because, again, syncing problems, Kelly. Apologies. Genius Bar appointment later today, in case you were wondering. By the way, Genius Bar. Went there yesterday. I'm like, hey, can I get an appointment? Like, how about an hour and a half or 2 hours from now? Be like, how about no? How about tomorrow?
It's absurd. I haven't been in years.
No.
One of my least favorite places to go. I even warned you yesterday. It's like you have to have an appointment. Then you show up for your appointment and you usually have to wait then, too.
So about a quarter of
it's fun.
It's not fun.
Yeah,
not fun
yeah. Then you look around, and you're like, wait, there's like six people in here. What am I waiting?
Plus, they're also like, what's your problem? You couldn't figure it out on your own?
Yeah. The geniuses like to talk down to you a bit.
Yeah, they're geniuses. Yeah. They're geniuses, for God's sakes. Yeah. And you're at their bar. Okay, about a quarter of the league's coaches qualify under those three guardrails, if you will, that Cleve T.A. came up with. Those coaches are Jim Harbaugh of the Chargers. Jim Harbaugh of the Chargers, who's, remember, the Chargers last year won five games. Their season win total is 8.5. And he's 11-1 to win this at DraftKings. Mike McDonald of the Seattle Seahawks. Not Mike McDaniel, not Michael McDonald, Mike McDonald. We got that right? Seahawks won 9 last year. Season win total this year, 7.5. He's 22-1. Dave Canales of the Panthers. Panthers won 2. Season win total is 5.5. He's 18-1. Again, 2 of the 3 for some of these. Jonathan Gannon of the Cardinals. They won 4, the Cardinals did last year. Season win total 7.5. He's 15-1. Shane Steichen of the Colts. They won 9 last year. Season win total is 8.5. He is 16-1. Dan Quinn qualifies on all. Commanders won 4 last year. Season win total 6.5. He's 18-1. Last two, Brian Callahan of the Titans. They won 6 last year. Season win total 6.5. He's 20-1. Kevin O'Connell of the Vikings, which ended up being Cleve's pick, if you recall. Vikings won 7 last year. Their season win total 7.5. He is 25-1. So that's a quarter of the coaches in the league who kind of fit at least 2 of the 3 of these situations. Now, there are others, right, that are in there too. But those are 8 that really are in pocket. So of those, Kelly, again, Cleve liked Kevin O'Connell. 25-1. You could still get him at a good number. Yeah. Part of that, of course, is the number at which you get it. But
25-1 at DraftKings right now.
Yeah, 25-1, as I mentioned. But the shortest of those is Harbaugh. Harbaugh's 11-1. I mean, we're not talking that short. By the way, Matt Eberflus, the short shot in all this, at 9-1. Do any of the ones I mentioned stick out to you? I'll tell you the one that's up for me already.
I doubt I'm going to have a bet in this market going into the season. I think that a lot of the names you just rattled through are the ones that make the most sense. I think Jim Harbaugh, it really jumps out. I mean, if that team, you're playing in a division with, I don't expect the Broncos or the Raiders to be very good. I know some people are higher on the Raiders a little bit, but I don't think they're going to be all that great. I think he makes sense, a lot of sense. I think your boy Dan Quinn makes a lot of sense on the Commanders. There's a couple that, like, I think if Kyler Murray or Anthony Richardson, like, they're probably, for those teams to do well, they're probably going to have to have big years. I think a lot of the credit's going to end up going to those quarterbacks in those situations. And not necessarily that matters as much in the NFL, like Coach of the Year, that it would steal away any credit from the coaches, but I always have that in the back of my mind at least. So I think a couple I would be most interested in, Harbaugh and Dan Quinn, but I don't imagine I'm going to have a bet in this.
You and I see eye to eye on this. The first coach that I went to was Mike McDonald of the Seahawks, because I actually think the Seahawks are going to be good this year.
Yeah, and he would be a good example of getting credit, right? He would get the credit.
Well, but the problem is they won 9 games last year, right?
Yeah, so you'd have to be.
Based on, you have to, what's the average?
I mean, they'd have to win the NFC West, probably.
The number of wins for the team increased by an average of 5.5 from the prior year. So they would, most likely be under that.
You need minimum a 13-win Seahawks team that wins the NFC West.
So it's based on this anyway, it's not a good bet. Nor is Shane Steichen because the Colts won 9, right? So like, it's going to be tough for Mike McDonald and Shane Steichen to win this because of that.
And then I think so, like, if the Colts pull that off, then they're dominated the AFC South, and they've got, 13, 14 wins, whatever, right? Like, then I'm just, I want Anthony Richardson MVP at 30-1 at double the odds.
That's right. You don't want this.
Yeah, I don't want this.
So I think for a coach specifically, because I don't think the Panthers are going to be that good. Understatement. I don't think Jonathan Gannon and the Cardinals are going to end up being that good. I do think, and I don't think Tennessee is. So I do think Cleve's Kevin O'Connell is a very smart play, and it's got the longest odds of any of them. But I do think that Dan Quinn at 18-1 is very interesting. And the other one would be the obvious one to me, which is Jim Harbaugh at 11-1. Jim Harbaugh, it's almost too obvious. They won 5 games last year. Season win total is 8.5. He's 11-1. There's no shame in 11-1. That's still a good number. Eberflus is the only one shorter. By the way, Robert Saleh is not winning. Like, if the Jets do well, is he getting credit?
Right, there's no way.
I mean,
that should have been the prime example I brought up. Yeah. Yes, he's not. It's all Aaron Rodgers' love at that point.
If the Bears do great, is Eberflus getting credit? Or is it the fact that they have Caleb Williams and a stacked team now for Caleb, as stacked as you can get for a rookie to play with? I just think it's Harbaugh because the perception with Harbaugh is you've lost Eckler, you've lost Keenan Allen. The perception will play in that Jim Harbaugh will get all the credit. I still think he's the best bet. And I don't disagree with the number and the play on Kevin O'Connell either, because if you think the Vikings are going to be good, that might be a better play. But I just think Harbaugh is the obvious play here.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't think I'll be betting because I'm not that confident in how great the Chargers are going to be.
Oh, see, I think their schedule is lined up for them.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, they won 5 last year.
I know.
That's the thing.
I'm just saying, as far as quality of the team, I think it's next 2 seasons for where he makes a bigger impact. Yeah.
We got all year to banty it about. Soccer next, Euros, Copa America, and more with Paul Carr. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number 2 of a Numbers Game in VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, live from Bar Canada at the D. Paul Carr standing by to talk soccer with us. We also have Paul Sporer on the way later this hour. To talk with us about Major League Baseball. Tomorrow, the Jardians girl is on, the original Jardians lady.
A.K.A. Deanna Colon.
Deanna Colon, who is just a wonderful human being, we're told. But we...
Overall great person?
Overall great person, as Kelly would say. But we really would like to big her up and make her feel good. So she's on the show tomorrow. We get tweets at Beatty the Book. Brian M., yes, Mark Cavendish. I love his frozen potato products. What is the brand again for the frozen stuff? What is it?
I have no idea.
Yeah, no, it's a joke. I guess at one point, Sinner had a medical timeout, so a lot of people tweeting in about that. Where Manny Davison said, played Medvedev plus 155 while Drew was on and got 16-1 for him to win it all. We're doing the tennis, boys. Well, they're still playing.
Let's do the tennis.
Medvedev.
Where's Navarro at?
Up a break.
Is she on?
She doesn't have a court to play on yet. They're only playing on the center court in court one right now, so they'll get them on. DJ Jam, Sinner thoughts during his medical break. We didn't see this because we were doing the show. Do I want to keep hitting this green fuzzy ball for the next week, or would I rather go lay up in bed for the week with the beautiful Kalinskaya, who is out of the tournament already? decisions. Oh, and then Spence has this about our Coach of the Year discussion. He says, no one is talking about Raheem Morris for Coach of the Year. The Falcons are expected to be much better and win the NFC South. It makes more sense with Cousins at quarterback than those others you guys mentioned. Well, easy about the other.
Raheem Morris definitely. He's definitely alive for sure.
No, I'm just saying he said more than the others we were talking about. I don't know about more, but...
But he's a live candidate.
He's live. Yeah. The problem is that their season win total is 9.5. And again, that's the top of where your season win total really can be because there is expectations, right? It's not going to catch anybody by surprise if the Falcons win the NFC South. And in fact, if they do it, you know, at, say, 11-6... Is that really enough for Raheem Morris to win the Coach of the Year? I don't know that it is.
Yeah.
You got to win more than that, I think.
I think so. I think they'd have to be dominant in that division, but I think they can.
They can be. I think that's true. So Raheem Morris absolutely deserves a mention.
Also, at some point later in the show, I think we've got to circle back to some of the Wimbledon drama, the hot goss from yesterday.
What was the hot goss?
Zverev after the match, and Djokovic.
Oh.
Man.
Well, Zverev and Fritz, I thought, had just a nice conversation.
No, didn't he? Like he called out without calling out his girlfriend.
What?
Who we were discussing, right? What's her name? Morgan.
The influencer.
Who I definitely don't follow on Instagram.
Taylor Fritz's girlfriend.
Zverev said afterward that his coach's corner was like, he was unruly or something like that.
Oh.
But it was everybody who wasn't one of his coaches and that doesn't know tennis. So it was like clearly he was just talking about her but didn't want to say her name.
That they were too unruly in the box.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't even know that. Wow, drama. Now, and the Medvedev and the Djokovic thing is Djokovic is really like way too sensitive.
Yeah.
He does the violin thing. They were not booing. They were chanting Rune.
Does he really not get that?
He doesn't get it. He doesn't get
After
it.
Like
he gets
20
really,
years?
He gets really offended when people start cheering for the other thing. And then when he did something, they start, you know, he didn't get it. There he is. There's your tennis hot goss, everybody. Paul Carr joins us from Topeka, Kansas, Expected Value Podcast, and, of course, True Media Networks, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. What's happening, Paulie?
Hey, we are down to the super business end of these tournaments. Semifinals and on, so very exciting.
Can we take a listener question before you talk about the super business part?
Sure, let's do it.
Tim Lawson, The Better Life. Going to need Paul's thoughts on this week's Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup matches along with the Copa and Euros. Big couple days for soccer, he says. Any thoughts?
So the U.S. Open Cup is a nationwide tournament among teams from any level of soccer in the U.S. So you have your MLS teams, your USL teams, and different leagues below that. So that's going on this week. I don't have any plays on this. This is definitely one of those that you want to see the lineups to see how serious, especially the MLS teams, are taking this. Some will just roll out the reserve side for especially the early rounds. Some will take it a little more seriously. That varies a lot. This tournament should be a lot bigger. This is not necessarily betting related, but it just should be bigger because it's a giant, you know, 100-ish teams tournament, and you get Cinderella runs, you get big upsets of the second, third, fourth division teams, knocking off MLS teams, but just hasn't quite figured out how to monetize and popularize it yet. Mm.
Today you have Atlanta United versus Indy 11 and the Sacramento Republic FC versus the Seattle Sounders.
Everybody knows that.
Oh. Gil, I don't have to tell you that when Sacramento Republic and Seattle Sounders collide, just throw the records
out. The records out, Paul. Throw them out. It's a rivalry game. All right, let's start with Copa. Let's crescendo to Euros. Start with Copa. Right. You have thoughts tonight. You have thoughts tomorrow. Tonight, it's Argentina and Canada, or as Deborah Song fashion stylist, native Torontonian, said to me the other day, hey, is Canada in something that I should know about? what are your thoughts? Does Canada have a shot here?
I mean, they've got a shot. You always have a puncher's chance in these knockout rounds. And Canada's a defense-first team. So the question, of course, is can they keep Argentina off the scoreboard? And these two teams played in the group stage, and Canada did it for a half. They were, you know, going toe-to-toe, punch-for-punch, whatever the analogy is, with Argentina for the first half. Had the same number of shots, more expected goals. But then Argentina kind of cranked it up in the second half, and Canada wore down, and Argentina won that one 2-0. So there's a chance that happens again. I don't think it will. Argentina, their defense has been pretty good, allowed the fewest shots among knockout teams. And Canada, like I said, defense first, not a great attacking team, somewhat by design. They only have 2 goals in 4 games. That's the fewest among all the quarterfinalists. So I like Argentina to win. I like them to win to nil at -110. Again, some places this is like an Argentina, both teams to score no parlay. But you should be able to get close to even money on this. Argentina win to nil against Canada.
Wah, wah. There it is. That's it for Canada, according to Paul Carr. Yep. It's over.
All right.
Tomorrow, Colombia and Uruguay. That is the other matchup in this one. And you have a Colombia future, I believe, that is still alive.
I do. +1400, still kicking. So I'm going to let that part ride, I think, for this one.
Going to let it ride. But you do have a prop play here.
Do have a prop. So this is a little bit of a fun one. Over half a red card. So there will be a red card at +285.
Wow.
These two teams. So if you saw any of the Uruguay-Brazil game, it was 0-0. Uruguay committed 26 fouls, just clearly trying to break up the game. That's the most fouls in a game at this tournament. These two teams have committed the most fouls of any teams in the tournament. So I think it's going to be that kind of game again. And Uruguay kind of notoriously, they've got, you know, coaches have been saying, why do they have so many fouls but only 3 yellow cards in the whole tournament? And so that's out there, that narrative that, you know, the referees are hearing about. So I think it's going to be physical because, you know, these high-level South America games tend to be that way. And if you're physical, there's lots of fouls, a handful of yellows, there's got a pretty good shot of getting a red, especially late in the game when things get chippy. So give me a red card at +285.
Man is rooting for a red card tomorrow night, Colombia and Uruguay.
Rooting for violence.
No, I bet it already. That's the most fun bet we've had on the show in like a week, I feel like.
Sometimes you bet against human achievement. Sometimes you bet for human violence.
That's right. Yeah. I'm going to watch a soccer game rooting for guys to fight. That would be ideal.
That'd be a very American thing of us to do.
I want a camera on Kelly watching this game.
Come on, punch him. You're going to take that?
That was only a yellow. Come on.
All right. Euros. Now, we talked about this yesterday, that just the amazing ability of both France and England to have advanced to this semifinal. And in the case of today's game, Spain and France. By the way, is this a 12 noon Eastern tilt or 12 noon Pacific?
Pacific.
So this is, yeah, 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Pacific. They switched the times up. You got Spain and France going. France is the first team ever to advance the semifinals of the Euros without scoring a goal in open play. We went through it game by game yesterday. It has been a own goal couple times from their opponents. It's been a 1-1 draw where both were on PKs. It's been a 0-0 penalty kicks, and it was another one in penalty kicks here in the last match. So they're here against Spain. Spain may be the best team thus far, would you say, Paul?
I think it's pretty undeniable. It was Spain or Germany, and Spain beat Germany. Spain is definitely the best team we've seen, in part just because they're the only team that seems to be trying to score goals regularly, which is, you know, fairly fundamental, but not something we've seen a lot of.
You got Spain here? Is that the way you're going?
I am. I have the Spain win, plus 175. Like I said, Spain's the only team interested in attacking. France has a very clear defend-first game plan. Their coach, Didier Deschamps, was a great defender for France. And I think he takes joy in this. You see him at press conferences. He gets asked about it, and he's just, like, smiling. He loves it. So this is his style. It's defend first. It's get the ball to Mbappe and let him do his thing. But the problem is Mbappe is clearly not 100%, whether it's the broken nose, whether it's something else that's bothering him. Not really sure. So, you know, this is kind of a, you know, fool me once, shame on me, fool me four times, shame on them, or whatever it's supposed to be. I'm not going to expect France to kick it up a gear two or three until they do it. So I trust Spain more than any other team to get a goal, maybe two. I'm not convinced France can shift gears. So this is just the win in regulation, plus 175 on Spain.
All right. Then tomorrow night, the Netherlands against England, Holland against England, the Dutch against England. England also, like France, just 5 points in the group stage, one win, two draws. But then in case of England, two come from behind wins against Slovakia. They get the equalizer with 5 minutes into added time, and then they get a Harry Kane header to win it. That sustained the rest of the way in the extra time. Then against Switzerland, 75th minute, Switzerland goes up 1-0. England ties it 5 minutes later, and they end up winning on PKs. And here they are against the Dutch. What do you got?
I can't bet England. I just can't. I mean, they've been so bad in this tournament with all the attacking talent that they have. They just can't muster much of anything. Nothing's connecting together, etc. So I have the Dutch to advance at plus 110. If I'm honest, I don't love the price. I wish it were a little bit better. But I just think the Dutch can beat you different ways. The Dutch weaknesses defensively are things like transition and, you know, get your runners into space, and England doesn't do either one of those things very well. So just give me the Dutch to advance at plus 110. This game, just turn it on after 2 hours when it's in penalty.
Okay, Spain to win today, Netherlands to advance tomorrow, then in Copa America, Argentina win to nil against Canada tonight, Colombia, Uruguay over a half a red card. Paul Carr, baby, solid semifinal segment. Thank you, sir.
You bet. Let's go.
At Paul Carr, C-A-R-R on Twitter. We'll come back. How about some college football with Pete Futak? We'll take a look at the Heisman and more next.